This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for a look at Monday's headlines, and we begin with the political calendar here as primary season begins to heat up for the midterm elections in 2010. The marquee matchup on Tuesday will be in the Keystone State of Pennsylvania, where five-term Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter, for most of that time a Republican but now a Democrat, tries to win the Democratic nomination against two-term Congressman and retired Navy Admiral Joe Sestak. Specter held a large lead throughout most of the primary process. Now virtually every poll considers it a dead heat, with some now saying that Sestak holds a statistically insignificant lead. That could go late into the evening on Tuesday in Pennsylvania. Awaiting the winner will be former Republican Congressman Pat Toomey, who almost defeated Specter in the Republican primary 6 years ago. Specter ended up winning that narrow contest and eventually coasting to another term back in 2004, but a very different year here in 2010. Also on the ballot in Pennsylvania's 12th congressional district, a special congressional election designed to fill the seat of the late longtime Democratic Congressman John Murtha, a very close election in that race as well, with Tim Burns, the Republican, holding perhaps a slight lead over former Murtha staffer Mark Kritz. The latest progressive policy poll shows it at 48-47 for Burns. However, the intensity of the voters strongly behind the Republican, much more so than the Democratic candidate. For more insight on some of the key Pennsylvania races on Tuesday, please head to worldnetdaily.com and dateline.radioamerica.org, where you can hear my conversation with Rob Gleason, chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. A couple of other states will be hosting some political drama on Tuesday as well, including Arkansas, where two-term incumbent Democrat Blanche Lincoln is being challenged by the left of her party. Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter is her challenger. Lincoln holds a lead, but with multiple candidates in the race besides her, it's unlikely she'll reach the magical 50% plateau, in which case she won't need to have a runoff. Most likely a runoff will be necessary between Lincoln and Halter in the coming days. And in Kentucky, Republican Senator Jim Bunning has announced he will not be running for re-election this year after two terms in the U.S. Senate. So that means a critical and very combative Republican primary will come to a head on Tuesday. The establishment candidate, State Secretary of State Trey Grayson, is apparently trailing by double digits in some polls against Rand Paul, the son of Texas Congressman Ron Paul. Mr. Paul of Kentucky is also a physician, just like his father. And out in the great state of Hawaii, a vacant congressional seat there as well due to the resignation of Neil Abercrombie, who is running for governor on the Democratic ticket. Republican Party very optimistic that at least until November and the end of this current congressional session, they will hold that seat. We'll find out on Tuesday. In other news today, the Supreme Court with two critical rulings. The High Court ruling today that federal officials can indefinitely hold inmates who are considered sexually dangerous after their prison terms are complete. It was a 7-2 decision that reversed a lower court decision that had said that Congress overstepped its authority in allowing indefinite detentions of those considered sexually dangerous. It all stems from an act signed by President Bush in 2006 called the Adam Walsh Child Protection and Safety Act, and that okayed the civil commitment of sexually dangerous federal inmates. However, in writing for the majority, Justice Stephen Breyer says the statute is a necessary and proper means of exercising the federal authority that permits Congress to create federal criminal laws, to punish their violation, to imprison violators, to provide appropriately for those imprisoned, and to maintain the security of those who are not imprisoned but who may be affected by the federal imprisonment of others. The law had been challenged by four men who served prison terms ranging from 3 to 8 years for possession of child pornography or sexual abuse of a minor. Their confinement was supposed to end more than 2 years ago, but prison officials said there would be a risk of sexually violent conduct or child molestation if they were released. Justice Clarence Thomas wrote the dissent for the two justices who did not go along with the majority opinion, basically saying that Congress can only pass laws that deal with the federal powers listed in the Constitution. Nothing in the Constitution, writes Thomas, quote, expressly delegates to Congress the power to enact a civil commitment regime for sexually dangerous persons, nor does any other provision in the Constitution vest Congress or the other branches of the federal government with such a power. Thomas was joined on his dissent by Justice Antonin Scalia. In another important case today, the court ruling, 5-4, that juveniles may not be sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole unless guilty of homicide. And by doing so, they declared unconstitutional a sentencing practice that has been adopted by some states, but the court said was rejected the world over. Justice Anthony Kennedy, siding with the four liberal justices, said that states must provide juveniles who receive lengthy sentences a quote-unquote meaningful chance to eventually show they should be released. Says Kennedy, quote, by denying the defendant the right to re-enter the community, the state makes an irrevocable judgment about that person's value and place in society. This judgment is not appropriate in light of a juvenile non-homicide offender's capacity for change and limited moral culpability. Again, Clarence Thomas writing for the dissent, and this time in more blistering language, saying, quote, the court is quite willing to accept that a 17-year-old who pulls the trigger on a firearm can demonstrate sufficient depravity and irredeemability to be denied reentry into society, but insists that a 17-year-old who rapes an 8-year-old and leaves her for dead does not. Thomas goes on to say, quote, the question of what acts are deserving of what punishments is bound so tightly with questions of morality and social conditions as to make it almost by definition a question for legislative resolution. Thomas was joined in his dissent fully by Justice Antonin Scalia and in part by Justice Alito. For part of it, he was joined by the Chief Justice John Roberts as well, who eventually sided with the liberal justices with the specific case at hand. On to the Gulf oil spill now, and BP is finally collecting some of the oil that continues to gush out of that ruptured oil rig, but only about 20% of it. Doug Suttles is the CEO of British Petroleum.
We're measuring over 1,000 barrels a day that we're now capturing on the surface in the drillship Enterprise. We'll be ramping this thing up over the course of the next 24 hours. We should be able to get more than 1,000 barrels a day. We won't get all of it.
BP crews on Sunday hooked up the tube that's designed to funnel the crude into a tanker ship. Of course, millions of gallons of crude are already in the Gulf. This contraption was hooked up successfully and sucked oil from a pipe at the blown well Sunday afternoon after being hindered by several setbacks. Much more analysis of the effort to stop the gushing of the oil in the Gulf and the containment policy after that. Please check my interview with Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana. That's again at worldnetdaily.com or dateline.radioamerica.org. Also, in terms of the energy debate, while the latest climate bill again arrives with a thud in the U.S. Senate and probably won't pass and get to the president's desk this year, the Obama administration remains undaunted. They're more than likely to pursue their carbon-cutting goals through regulation, not through legislation, through the Environmental Protection Agency. For reaction to that strategy, again, those same websites, worldnetdaily.com, dateline.radioamerica.org, and you can find my interview with Georgia Congressman Tom Price. And finally, Iran has thrown another curveball to the United States and our Western allies when it comes to their nuclear program. Last fall, the U.S., France, and other allies demanded that Iran allow other nations to enrich its uranium in order to verify that it's not being used to develop atomic weapons. Well, Iran is agreeing to a uranium swap, but not with any of the countries involved in the negotiations. Instead, it's doing so with Brazil and Turkey. The Obama administration says that a fuel swap would be a positive step, but any move to continue enrichment internally would be a direct violation of UN Security Council resolutions. To be sure, much more on this coming up later in the week. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.